FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's March 26th, 2018. Hey, as always, participate in the show. Email us. The address is kl@kerrylutz.com. Trump, initially the budget deal, the continuing resolution for $1.3 trillion, which is totally deceptive because it doesn't include any of the so-called non-discretionary spending. Now, look, for me, non-discretionary spending is rent. It's, well, I was going to say the phone bill, but certainly the cell phone bill and the internet connection. Outside of that, everything else is discretionary. When you're dealing with a government, everything becomes non-discretionary except the things that you fight about. In any event, it looked like he had a loser deal. He wasn't going to get the wall. But lo and behold, well, John Rubino's with us now, dollarcollapse.com. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, Trump is kind of the story today. let me start by saying or reiterating that I'm never going to defend him as a human being. All right. He is a creepy guy.
You don't have to. Don't even attempt it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But as a politician, he's doing something interesting because he made a lot of seemingly outrageous promises during the election. And most people dismissed him as somebody who, even if you agree with the thrust of some of what he was saying, he'd never get it because, you know, politics works this way and diplomacy works that way. And, you know, a business guy doesn't just walk in and start issuing orders. That's not how it works in government. And yet he did that. He has walked in and just started doing the stuff that he said he would do. He is literally building a wall across the Mexican border. He just, out of the blue, slapped China with a bunch of fairly serious tariffs. And they've come to the negotiating table and offered some stuff in return that the markets like. You know, stocks are up today because maybe we aren't going to have a war with China or any kind of a war, trade or shooting or whatever, because they're going to offer some stuff that we want. You know, they're going to lower their trade surplus in cars and computers, et cetera, et cetera. And he's literally threatening to nuke North Korea. And now they're going to have a meeting. And, it won't be a surprise at all if that meeting ends up with Trump getting some of the stuff he wants. And then, you know, the most recent thing is he hired one of the most crazed neoliberals. John Bolton. Neoconservatives. Sorry, neoconservative.
Yes. John Bolton. Not one of the most hardcore neocon on the planet. Yes.
Who he's on record as wanting to attack Iran. That's going to be the advice that Trump gets from this guy is let's just go in, let's bomb them, and let's get rid of their nukes once and for all. And so it's a safe bet that there's going to be some negotiating over that. Now that he's staked out his position, you know, his guy wants to blow you up. So what are you going to offer to stop him from listening to his main guy?
We're ready, willing, and able to blow you up at any moment. So, now that we have that out of the way, what do you want to do, guys? He's quite the negotiator, huh?
Well, and see, this is his business style. In his career as a developer, if you didn't want to sell him something, he would sue you right away.
Yeah.
Ruin your life so that all of a sudden selling to him became the least bad option. So he didn't really change who he was. You know, we elected this guy and he's behaving exactly how he's always behaved with a new set of tools. You know, he didn't have nuclear weapons before. And he seems to be enjoying this extra leverage that it gives him.
Hey, can you imagine if he had nukes? Man, he would own the world now if he had had nuclear weapons when he was building his empire.
And so, you know, we're laughing now. Okay. And none of this is funny if the nukes actually get used.
No. But it's not going to happen.
Well, yeah, let's assume it doesn't so we don't terrify ourselves and everybody who's listening. But And just focus on the fact that suddenly we have a politician who's keeping his promises and the world doesn't know what to do with it. It's interesting. You know, whether you agree with the promises or not, you still have to kind of enjoy the theatrical side of a politician actually trying to do the stuff he said he would do. So, you know, it's turned very interesting in a hurry here. And then meanwhile, you know, he's got a lot of other stuff going on that's really threatening to his career as a politician. All this, all the investigations and all the sex scandals, et cetera, might or might not derail the stuff he's trying to do, which just that adds another layer of drama to this whole story. So I don't know. It's fun. You know, if we assume we're not going to die in a global nuclear war, then this is actually kind of amusing in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think he's one of those guys, like they say, crazy like a fox, you know, basically. Let them know what your fallback position is, what you're willing to do, and then surprise them and watch what happens. It's quite fascinating to watch, John. It really is.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole world right now is trying to calculate or trying to figure out what in all of this is a bluff and what's real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more stuff he does, actually does, then the less likely it becomes that the next thing is a bluff.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he's creating conditions in which he's a really unpredictable, or the U.S. is extremely unpredictable.
Well, that's what he said he was going to do, yeah. You know, from the get-go is I'm not telling you what I'm going to do because then it won't be a surprise. That's what I used to tell my kids, like when they wanted to know what their Christmas present was. I said, you know, I'm not telling you because then it wouldn't be a surprise. And
yeah,
that's him.
Yeah. So the next few months are going to be really interesting from a geopolitical standpoint, because a lot of this stuff is happening fast. So there will be a lot of big announcements and a lot of changes in relationships out there. Mm-hmm. And you know, who knows how it plays out. It's just interesting to watch. And I have absolutely no predictions about where we end up with any of this. But I'm enjoying the process from a theatrical standpoint.
Well, the wall is the most fascinating to me because they're all hell bent against it. The Democrats are against it because they want more undocumented Democratic voters. And the Republicans are against it because they want more cheap labor. And you would think that would be an insurmountable force for him to take on. And yet, John, what happened? Right?
He's doing it. He sincerely doesn't want a lot of new people coming here. You know, that overrides all the rest of the stuff. And you're right. That's why there was never real immigration reform in the past, because both the left and the right benefited from as many people who want to come coming, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans love cheap labor who can't complain about abuse, right? Because they'll be shipped right back to wherever they came from. And Democrats love people who get benefits and
dependent.
And thank the government for it by voting for liberal incumbents, you know. So both of these guys benefit from open borders. And really the only people who don't benefit are the people who live in the communities that are swamped by people showing up from other countries who aren't here legally and who might have to compete with those guys for jobs and stuff like that. But that's not a constituency that traditionally has mattered to Republicans at all, and recently hasn't mattered to Democrats either. You know, that's how Trump got elected, basically, by ignoring that a big section of the populace who are affected by open borders and free trade. And it turns out there's enough of them to elect somebody.
Yeah.
So next time around, you know, we're not going to ignore them. The Democrats and the Republicans are going to speak the language of the, you know, the 40-year-old white guy who lost his factory job and now is a greeter at Walmart or something. You know, they're going to be trying to win that vote. So the next election will be very interesting in part because of that.
Yeah, well, it's very true. The forgotten man and the forgotten man, that blue collar worker, both white and black for the most part. Where do they live? They live in the Rust Belt. You live in Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Iowa, Minnesota, even, although that hasn't turned yet. Pennsylvania is millions of them there. And what has he done? He's reignited the coal industry, no pun intended, for better or for worse. For the foreseeable future, there is still a need for fossil fuels, as they're called, even though they're not really fossil fuels. I mean, when was the last time you went to the gas station, you filled up your tank and a dinosaur bone came out? You know, it's just silliness. They come from someplace, but fossils, I don't know. But all of these industries, he's helped the car industry. You've got Foxconn spending $10 billion on a factory in Wisconsin. All of these foreign companies are scrambling now to go join the fun in opening up U.S.-based manufacturing or assembly facilities. So this is cementing his position for 2020 and also cementing the position of the party, even though it might not appear that way right now, for the upcoming midterms.
Yeah. You know, next time around, if the Democrats run Joe Biden, let's say, and he tries to be the friend of the working man, and Trump is against him, that's going to be interesting, because Trump's going to be able to say, well, where were you for the last 40 years, Joe? You know, I actually did some of this stuff. Why didn't you even propose any of it? And that's going to be a fairly powerful message. You know, it was inconceivable when Trump got elected that he would get reelected, I think, to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's suddenly become, you know, probably not likely, but conceivable. This is an amazing time. Stuff is happening. Well, is very hard to predict.
I'll tell you this. I said from the get-go, he's going to build that wall. I'll tell you what else is going to happen. All right. It appears very unlikely right this moment that it will ever happen, but Obamacare is going to be dismantled. It is not going to exist in a couple of years. I don't know how it's going to happen, but just like he figured out how to do it, how to build that wall when nobody wanted it, he's going to get rid of Obamacare. What is going to take its place, if anything? I don't know, but Obamacare will be history by the time he is done. I am pretty confident of that. It's going to happen in a way that you never thought possible, that nobody, just like the same way this wall is getting built. The danger of Congress abdicating their role of actually passing budgets and instead passing continuing spending resolutions, is that they lose control over actually pinpointing and pigeonholing all the spending. So as a result, it's like, hey, Donald, you got $700 billion for the military. Here's what you should spend it on. And then he spends it on what he wants to, which includes the wall, because he's declared the border a national emergency. About time. I mean, that what's going on in that border is just criminal and has been for two generations, both Republican and Democratic administrations. So just the same way he got that through, you can bet your bottom dollar that Obamacare will be eliminated in a similar manner. Hey, and let's go back to one other thing. Dodd-Frank. Okay. Dodd-Frank has dramatically been rolled back with bipartisan support. How do you explain that one?
Well, that actually, I think, Kerry, is pretty easy to explain, because the banks still run the government.
Yeah, well, but
so the minute they get a chance to roll back regulations, everybody in government is in favor of it. So if Trump says okay, then it happens, you know.
But you know, the good thing is, and even though I think the whole thing is a farce, Dodd-Frank, but at least they deregulated all the non so-called too big to fail banks. There's only 12 banks now that are too big to fail. And they still have strict regulations. All the other banks can pretty much go back to the way it was before. But, you know, the concept of giving mortgages to people that are, you know, have a pulse is kind of in the past. They're not really doing that now. There's some things that need to be done in that market to stop future disruptions in the real estate market that we'll learn the next time that we should have done it, like the good old fashioned 20% down mortgage. There's a reason why that was around since after the Great Depression. 20%, that's how much skin you need in the game to not bolt when the market does a 25 or 30% drop. It's that simple. But when you allow 3% down, you're going to have unintended consequences for sure. But Dodd-Frank rollback and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, this has been really amusing to watch because, you know, they designed it so there would be no accountability to Congress. The head of the CFPB doesn't even have to testify before Congress. And that guy Cordray left. He tried to appoint his hack as his successor, his handpicked successor. And Trump said, wait, no, you can't do that. Maybe I don't have any control over the agency, but I get to pick who runs it. And the courts agreed with him. I mean, that was a no-brainer. Now, Mick Mulvaney, who is his budget director, is also the head of CFPB, and he's dismantling it one regulation at a time. And that was a monstrosity of an agency. Got their money directly from the Fed, no allocation from Congress, and they could do whatever the hell they wanted, John. And now it's also getting dismantled.
Yeah, yeah. The whole regulatory apparatus right now, at least in my opinion, is based on some very false assumptions, and that is that the government can regulate big industries in the first place. You know, the way you have a functioning capitalist society, I think, is with one kind of regulation, which is antitrust. You just don't let these things get so big. You know, you break them up before they become JP Morgan Chase and Citigroup. And in that way, ensure competition, which keeps the markets working more or less well. But if you let huge amounts of power concentrate in the hands of a few big companies and then try to regulate them the way we do with the banks and with a lot of other industries, all you do is just hand the regulatory apparatus over to those companies.
Yeah, the regulatory capture, it's called.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly. And so the only solution is to break up the big banks. You know, you can't regulate them because they take over that process. And what's happening now always happens. You know, you take a little stab at forcing them to behave in a certain way. And then as soon as they get friendly people in power, they do away with those regulations and then go back to being the criminal enterprises that they were to begin with.
I guess RICO would be very effective against them. Nobody can take them on. I don't know if you watch that show Billions about the hedge fund manager guy in New York. It's supposed to be the U.S. attorney has a bloodlust after this guy who's modeled after Preet Bharara. It's a joke because Preet Bharara is a joke, a hack. But Paul Giamatti plays the U.S. attorney, and it's really good. I have to tell you, it's really good. And, you know, they can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, so break the things up. That's really the only solution that we have for these banks, John, is to break them up. There is no reason to have these multi-trillion dollar entities that hold the fate of the U.S. economy in the palm of their hands, right?
Oh, well, yeah. The system isn't capitalism when a few big companies and the government between them pretty much control everything. And that's what we've allowed to happen. You know, this is an oligopoly or an aristocracy. You know, pick the word that is most offensive and use it, because this is what we've got right now. And the sad thing is that when it does blow up, capitalism will be blamed for it.
Not if.
And this hasn't been capitalism for decades.
Yeah, it's crapitalism, as one person called it. Creditism, as one of my guests called it. I can't remember, but we'll have to have him on again soon. Duncan called it creditism, because the second credit to expansion starts to decrease below 3%, we have a collapse. And then we have the rule of the years ending with 7. All right. Charles Nenner is big on that. So is Nick Santiago. The next 7. All right. And multiples of 7 as well. 7-year cycle. The next one is 2021. And guess what? That's right after the election. I mean, we're just in for so much more fun here, John. But the one thing you got to admit, I know you despise Trump on a personal level, totally understandable, I'll remain neutral, is that, you know what? There's really nothing else to watch on TV other than what did Trump say? Who did he tell to F off? Biden wants to beat the snot out of him. And Joe is like a little bit creepy, Joe. You talked about him in the beginning. He's got a thing where he just likes to put his arms around women and whisper in their ears in public. He's creepiness personified, and that's his big competition. Well, you know, like Trump doesn't do it to, you know, sneakily. He's just out there in the open. So, I mean, that kind of takes the whole sexual harassment thing off the shelf once Biden becomes the nominee, right? I mean, what can you say about Biden that hasn't already been said? He's a creep.
Yeah. It's been a while since we've had any people that that you can call good, objectively good, running for major office, you know?
Yeah.
And I think in Ron Paul was so refreshing because he seemed to actually believe what he was saying. You know, he didn't have an ulterior motive.
We love
I think
Ron.
That's a lot of the reason that he resonated across age groups. You know, college kids liked him.
Yeah.
There's nobody around like that right now.
No, Ron is like, hey, we've talked to him on the show, and he's said the same thing for all these years. You know, he's been totally consistent in his views on government, on the economy, on gold. Hey, and by the way, John, we would be totally remiss in not talking about precious metals. A couple of interesting things have come about over the past couple of weeks. The commitment of traders. We're looking at the relative strength of gold today. It's up $8 the ounce, just about, to $13.55, give or take. Silver has even gone up a bit. It's $16.70. I mean, you see the strength of it, of gold. It's not, you know, we have a bunch of down days. It'll get knocked down $15-$20 in a day. And then within a week, it's back up. And that, to me, is sending out a major signal, perhaps towards the end of the year, that there's going to be probably breaking through that 1400 range. I don't think quite yet, but I think it's going to occur probably third quarter.
Yeah. Gold has been attacking that 1360 to 1400 range ever since 2014. And it's been smacked back down every time it gets there. But one of these days it'll just blow through and then it'll take off and find the next level of resistance, which might be in the 1500s or 1600s, you know, so we'll see. The gold to silver ratio is very interesting right now because gold is extremely expensive relative to silver, which means historically that silver will go up more than gold does if they both rise. So silver is looking really interesting right now, both from a speculative and a fundamental standpoint. So I'll go out on a limb and say silver outperforms gold in the coming year, and possibly it outperforms everything else, including stocks and bonds.
Yep. I think we're getting close to it. I don't think we're quite there yet. Hey, look, according to Eric Haddock, he's thinking, he said end of March it was going to start going up, and he wasn't at all in the least bit bearish on the metal, on the yellow metal. So you know what? I think really good chance. The people that I talked to, Charles Nenner is really bullish on it. But again, a couple of months. But the fact that it's stayed where it is, it's actually up for the year, it's pretty darn impressive considering what else has been going on. And I don't know if we've hit the point in the stock market yet where it's down for the year, but we will be soon if we're not.
Yeah. And, you know, about precious metals, especially silver, is that you can't wait until the uptrend is visible to lots of people, because then the supplies dry up. Then you like back in 2008, if you wanted to buy silver coins, you could send your money to a dealer and then you had to wait for 6 weeks before you got your coins. And that was a really stressful 6 weeks, right? Because they had your money, but you didn't have your silver. You don't want that to happen. So getting in before a good run starts is really the only way to participate in a thin little market like silver.
Well, we do know of one company that you can trust for this because they're the only company that is regulated by the state. They're required to have a bond. They're licensed by the state of Minnesota. And you know who I'm talking about there? Our good friend, Andy Scheckman, over at milesfranklin.com, which has been a sponsor of the show, John, virtually since the beginning. And, you know, those guys I trust. Never had one better business complaint. Was turning into an ad for them, but they deserve it because, look, if I'm buying gold, if I'm buying metals, I don't even think about it. That is where I go, John, because really, where else are you going to go?
Well, you know, choosing a dealer to buy precious metals from is a big part of the equation. So, I doubt if we have time here to go through the whole story, but there are ways to pick the good ones. Mm-hmm. And you want to find out what they are and you want to adhere to them. Don't buy from some unknown dealer because they're, 50 cents cheaper per coin or something like that. Make sure you check their Better Business Bureau rating, as you said, and just generally look into them. Yep. And only deal with people who have great reputations and who have been around for a while, because this market is full of fly-by-night operations never want to deal with.
Oh, what is it about it? Gold, but there's nothing different here. It's always been this way, John. It's always a caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware, because this is just the way that it's always happened. And hey, so anyways, we're kind of done for today. We kind of went over, but I think we covered some really great topics. And if you agree, then become part of this conversation, the debate, the discussion. Email us. The email address is kl@carrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Make sure you go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Subscribe to John's very informative newsletter. That way you get notified anytime he writes one of his stellar articles. Really, I think, in alternative finance, John, you are one of the top writers out there and from a lot of different perspectives. Not just the fact that you're a professional writer, but the fact that your perspective is really different than anything else you're going to find out there. So, John, we'll catch up with you next Monday, and let's see what else Trump is going to do in that 7 short days between now and then.
Great. Thanks, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.